Hello and welcome to Agri-Food Matters, the podcast from the UCD School of Agriculture and Food Science that aims to shed light on the topics that really matter in the world of agriculture and food. I'm Sean Duke and I'll be your host for this episode, episode 13 in our series. Now let's head over straight away to Julie Dowsett, the co-producer of this podcast. Hi Julie, so what do we have lined up for our listeners this time?
Today, Sean, we're going to be speaking to two professors in the School of Agriculture and Food Science here in UCD who do research into animal reproduction. They'll be specifically talking about cattle reproduction, but also about the implications of this research, which are not just far-reaching, but they're fascinating. One thing that particularly impressed me when I was speaking to both Pat and Trudy was that they were both talking about a lecturer called Professor Ian Gordon, who had been so influential to them and had inspired them to want to have a career in animal reproduction. He wasn't only a pioneer as a scientist, but apparently had a huge knowledge and a real deep passion for the topic. And they were telling me that unfortunately he died last year, but I can only imagine how proud he must have been to see two such well-respected and successful researchers following in his footsteps. Pat Lonergan works in the area of cattle fertility, or bovine embryology, and over the years, new technologies such as artificial insemination and sexed semen have made it to application in mainstream agriculture. We would have heard of those, and they would deliver a commercial advantage in the dairy and beef herds. But we'll hear that the research, technologies and medicines involved in techniques such as in vitro fertilization and embryo transfer are closely applicable to human fertility. And Pat will tell us about the collaborations at the interface between animal and human fertility. We'll then go on to talk to Trudy Fair, and a successful pregnancy she'll explain to us needs a healthy egg. And her work looks at a very fundamental level to understand the factors involved in making these eggs, or oocytes, capable of developing into a healthy pregnancy. She'll be telling us about how a major EU project that she's working on at the moment may be able to give us the ability to intervene to save endangered species before they come extinct, and how we need more specialist biologists like her to understand the origin of all life, which is the egg.
Thanks for setting the scene there for us, Julie. Let's hear first now from Pat Lonergan, Professor of Animal Reproduction at the School of Agriculture and Food Science, about his research into early embryo development in cattle. I began by asking Pat how important the communications between the early embryo and the mother are for the development of healthy embryos in cattle.
During very early pregnancy, within the first 2 weeks, the embryo has to signal to the mother that she's pregnant. If not, the mother will simply recycle, ovulate a new oocyte, a new egg, to give herself another chance to get pregnant. So in that first 2 weeks, the embryo has to signal that it's there to prevent that new cycle from starting and to maintain the pregnancy. And that involves a very intimate communication or contact between the developing embryo, which at that stage is a tiny ball of cells about a tenth of a millimeter across, signaling to the uterus, which is like a tiny drop in a huge ocean, if you like. So it's a very specific and sensitive signal that the embryo produces.
So why is it important to understand this process, this communication?
It's important because reproductive efficiency on farms is the main driver of profitability, and that's particularly emphasized in our pasture-based system, seasonal system of production, which is very short. It's got a very short breeding season of about 12 weeks in the spring. So it's important that cows get pregnant, and unfortunately nothing in biology is 100%. So even if I breed 100 cows today with very high quality semen, only about 55 to 60% will end up giving birth to a live calf in 9 months. And most of that embryonic loss, or embryonic mortality as it's called, happens very early in development. And in many cases, the cow never even knew she was pregnant because the embryo has died in the first couple of weeks before it should have signaled to her that she was.
So ideally, in terms of profits, what would we like to do? What would be better?
Well, the ideal situation is that every cow would get pregnant on mating start day, which is the start of the breeding season, which means they would calve early in the following calving season. And that means they would have a long time to recover prior to the next breeding season. Because the longer that period from calving to the next breeding the greater is the chance that the cow will be pregnant.
Okay, so that would be optimal. So that's absolutely what we're hearing. In terms of the signals then, what do we know so far? Is it chemicals? Is it hormones?
What's so it's a chemical. It's a peptide. In fact, in cattle, it's called interferon tau. But across all mammals, there is a signal, but the signal is different. For example, in humans, the signal is human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, which is actually the target in human pregnancy tests, as a product produced specifically by the Conceptus. So in ruminant species, cattle, sheep, goats, the signal is a substance called interferon tau. And the embryo has to produce adequate amounts of that signal around in cattle day 16, 17, in order to block the mechanisms that would cause the cow to recycle. And in other words, maintain pregnancy.
So where are you at now at the moment with all of this? So what do you know so far, if you like?
So our studies focus really on that intimate communication and on what drives what we call uterine receptivity, or the receptivity of the uterus to the developing embryo. And we know that one of the main factors there is a steroid hormone called progesterone. It's produced by the ovary, by a structure on the ovary during pregnancy. And progesterone is the main hormone of pregnancy. So the embryo, as it's developing, produces this signal interferon tau, and that blocks the mechanisms that would bring about suppression of those progesterone concentrations and therefore lead to a new ovulation. And so it's all about maintaining progesterone concentrations to maintain pregnancy.
And obviously, if we manage to kind of control that better, optimally, more optimally, if you like, that's a big benefit for Irish agriculture.
Yeah, as I said, efficiency of production or reproductive efficiency is very important for profitability. And so another focus, or a main focus of what we do, is actually the application of assisted reproductive technologies to improving farm animal production.
So what kind of technologies are out there at the moment in this assisted reproduction area?
So there's a whole range of technologies that are available to farmers to manipulate or improve the production system. The earliest one, and one that we really take for granted now, is artificial insemination. That's been around since the 1950s, and without it, we just simply would not have made the genetic improvements that we've made in terms of, for example, milk production over the past, you know, 7 decades or so. And that essentially allows us to really focus in on the male side and select only the very best males or bulls for breeding the next generation. Because animal breeding is all about selecting the best parents in the current generation so that the offspring of the next generation are better than the current generation for whatever the trait we're dealing with, whether it's milk yield, growth rate, litter size, or whatever is economically important. So AI has been around since the 1950s. In the 1970s, embryo transfer was developed, and that essentially tried to do for the female what AI did for the male. In other words, instead of a cow having one calf per year, using embryo transfer technology, we could allow cows to have multiple calves per year by simply removing embryos from valuable cows and letting them gestate in surrogate animals. In the late 1980s and early 90s, in vitro fertilization technology was developed and applied in domestic animals, and it's now the leading embryo technology that's used worldwide. I mean, approximately 1.3 to 1.4 million embryos are transferred commercially worldwide, and the majority of those now are produced in vitro using exactly the same test tube baby technology that's used in the fertility clinics around the country.
So this can help us select for certain traits that we find desirable in the animals.
Exactly, and it can increase the contribution of a valuable female in a way that wouldn't be possible biologically, and that's simply down to the difference in biology between males and females across all mammals. Males, once they reach puberty, they produce millions, if not billions, of viable gamete sperm at every ejaculation, while females at every ovulation, cattle for example, produce one. So every time a bull mates a cow, he has got millions, if not billions, of chances of getting that cow pregnant, while every time a cow ovulates, she's got one chance to get pregnant. And so assisted reproductive technologies are used to essentially try to redress that balance a little bit and allow the cow to contribute a little bit more to the herd. And one of the current applications of the embryo technology is actually in the area of beef on dairy. So beef on dairy is now currently a hot topic. One of the unintended consequences of the dramatic increase in cow numbers in Ireland since the removal of milk quotas in 2015 was an increase in the number of low-value male dairy calves. And there are all sorts of welfare issues that go along with those that could potentially risk reputational damage to the industry. So embryo transfer, where we would transfer in a beef embryo into cows that are not required to produce dairy replacements is one option to increase the value of those calves, you know, economically, and remove that issue of welfare concern. And that's something that we're involved in currently. We had a large trial in collaboration with colleagues in Chagas last year, looking at exactly that. So generating embryos using IVF technology in vitro, transferring those embryos into lactating dairy cows that were not required to produce replacements. And those calves were all born this spring, from about February to the beginning of March.
So you're increasing value of an asset that mightn't have been as valuable
exactly.
before.
And as well as that, removing a major welfare concern, these low-value calves that, you know, really are very low economic value.
Maybe mention something about Lyons Estate, because I know you spend a lot of time out there, and how important is that to your work?
Well, if I go back a little, so I graduated from animal science in 1989, and at the time we had a very inspirational lecturer, Ian Gordon, who actually died last year. He was a global leader in the area of animal reproduction, very prolific in terms of publishing books on the subject. And he was one of the pioneers in terms of the application of in vitro technology to cattle production.
Globally?
Globally, absolutely globally. And so I did my PhD with him back in the early 90s, based at Lyons, went abroad for several years, worked in Norway and in France for about 5 years, and then came back in the late 90s. And really, so we've got an IVF lab based in Lyons. The beauty of it is it's very close to the animals out there, so we can do comparable in vivo and in vitro trials at the same time. We're also ideally located very close to several major abattoirs, because one of the sources of the raw material are the ovaries of slaughtered animals that would be normally discarded. We can bring them back and back to the laboratory and recover oocytes from them. And one of the taglines that was used in the early days of the commercialization of this project was actually offspring from offal, because the ovaries typically would be discarded. But we can bring them back, recover oocytes, fertilize them in vitro, and generate embryos for transfer to recipients. So it's really fantastic technology. Our dairy industry is second to none in terms of its production efficiency. Our cows are very fertile. They're lower yielding than, for example, North American Holsteins, but that's because they're milking from grass, which is cheap. So, you know, we benefit from the cheaper inputs, and therefore we're producing milk more cheaply. We've got several leading groups in the area of animal reproduction between UCD and Chagask, and I think very well respected globally.
Fantastic.
You were listening there to Pat Lonergan. Now, let's hear from Professor Trudy Fair, who works in the area of bovine oocyte biology. I started first by asking Trudy to describe what this research entails exactly and why it's important for all of us.
Of course, Sean, happy to. Oocyte biology is the study of oocytes, or you might know them as eggs, which are the germ cell, the female gamete. It's the largest living cell in the body, and it contains all the information to develop into any other cell in the body. So we say that it's totipotent. So my interest is investigating various aspects of oocyte growth and development, and identifying the factors that make a good oocyte that is fertile and able to sustain fertilization and develop to an embryo and go on to form a pregnancy.
Right, and you're particularly interested, I believe, in the bovine, the cattle aspects of this, is that right?
Yes, for two reasons. First of all, I'm a graduate of UCD School of Agriculture and Food Science, and so my interest is in livestock and livestock fertility. And secondly, the bovine is a fabulous model for reproduction studies, because the duration of pregnancy is 9 months. So that's the same as in women. And also it's easy to access samples of ovaries and oocytes. We can get them as byproducts from meat production.
Before we get into the potential benefits, I mean, what was the original trigger then for you to get interested in this area in the beginning?
Oh, it goes back to the lectures of Professor Ian Gordon in my undergraduate degree in UCD. Professor Gordon passed away just a year ago, but he left an amazing legacy. His lectures were just completely fascinating, describing basic reproductive biology and also the new interventions that were being developed at the time to manipulate reproduction and fertility in livestock.
So he's a kind of an inspirational figure?
Absolutely. He was a pioneer of reproductive assisted reproductive treatments for livestock in Ireland in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. Now, the benefits to Irish farming and agriculture from this oocyte biology research, what are some of the things that we can gain from it?
My belief always is if we can identify what is gold standard, what the factors and processes that confer quality and competence on an oocyte, then we can identify ways to manipulate them to improve how they develop and their quality in the live animal. So factors such as nutrition, stress, lactation, disease, they can all impact the quality of the egg that's offered up for fertilization at the time of breeding. And if we know what a high quality good oocyte looks like in terms of its molecular biology or its molecular signature, then we can look at how we can intervene to improve it in the live animal. And then going forward for agriculture, we want to do this to improve efficiency of production so that, say, for example, in the dairy system, we want to produce a calf per cow per year. That's the most efficient and economical way for dairy production in Ireland. But we can also use oocyte biology as a mechanism for targeting genetic gain. So there are various assisted reproductive technologies that have the oocyte at its centre, and we can harvest oocytes from younger animals and fertilise them with high genetic merit bulls and transfer embryos then into recipients less high genetic merit cows to carry to term. So there's numbers of advantages to reproductive physiology, reproductive or assisted reproductive technologies, and the oocyte is at their core.
At the core of it, yeah. It has such potential.
And that brings me then to tell you the saying that we oocyte biologists work by, and that's ex ova omnia.
Latin, so, what's that?
So that's from the egg comes life.
Okay. Now, can you tell me, there's a consortium, I believe, you're involved with, EU consortium, which you're kind of excited about, I believe, in this area. Tell me about that.
Sean, I'm very excited about our EU consortium. So I'm the coordinator of an EU consortium just completely dedicated to oocyte biology. So it's called EUROVA. It's EU funded, and it's comprised of European scientists in here, myself in Ireland, in the UK, in Italy, France, Spain, Denmark, Germany, and the Netherlands and Belgium.
So this is like nirvana for you, isn't it? That you're heading and you're coordinating it, which is wonderful. So it's kind of been led to an extent from here.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, it is total nirvana for me because usually I'm one person deep working on the oocyte here at home. And many of my colleagues that I mentioned that are in Europe are also in small groups. So by bringing us all together, we create a critical mass and we can all work together and share ideas and share technologies and knowledge to better our own research. So the consortium brings expertise from a number of different species together. And with the mouse, the laboratory model is very tractable. We can do a lot of investigations with knockout models. So you can identify genes that are of interest and test them using knockout lines. But it doesn't always translate to what's going on in larger mammals. And so by bringing such a group together, we can compare across species and we can identify the regulatory factors that are conserved across species and then what is species specific and target interventions then based on species chronology of development and requirement.
So part of the consortium, it's important, the training aspect of young scientists is important.
Yes, it's an EU-funded Marie Sklodowska Curie European Training Network, which means that we're training 15 PhD students across the consortium, across the different institutions in the consortium, and we're training them to be oocyte biologists in working with the different species. So, for example, there are two PhD students working with me here in UCD.
Okay, wonderful. So the next generation is going to take up the torch from this.
Yeah, Sean, that was my big selling point to the EU, that I was improving and increasing the critical mass of oocyte biologists in the EU.
Yeah, because there's not too many like you.
Not too many.
And yes, so this endangered species angle on oocyte biology, it's important there, isn't it? Maybe I think the northern white rhino might be an example that you mentioned to me before we started.
Yes, Sean, I mentioned that we have, one of our colleagues is from Germany in when I was talking about the project, and we're delighted to have Professor Thomas Hildebrand as a beneficiary of the consortium, and he's working in the Berlin University of Berlin and Leibniz Zoo in Germany, in collaboration with a group called BioSecure, and they're looking to save endangered species, and in particular. Thomas is interested in how he can use assisted reproductive technologies to save the endangered northern white rhino. So at present, there are only two females remaining alive. They're based in a conservation in Kenya, and they're actually under armed guard 24 hours a day. They're a mother and a daughter. The mother is quite old, and I think she's 32. She's infertile, and her daughter, I think, is in her teens at present. The last surviving male died in 2018. So the strategy so far has been to produce hybrid embryos using the sperm from the male who died in 2018 to fertilize oocytes from the southern white rhino, which is a closely related species and not quite as endangered. There's not quite a number of them in breeding or conservation centres around Europe. So they've produced hybrid embryos from the northern and southern white rhino. The next stage is to transfer these embryos into recipients such as the southern white rhino. And if they successfully produce a rhino calf, then they can look to see if it's possible to harvest oocytes from the daughter northern white rhino and produce northern white rhino embryos from her, and maybe they will end up transferring these embryos to other recipients to carry to term. But hopefully that will work. But if it doesn't, all won't be lost, because there's the potential to harvest the ovaries from the two surviving females once they die. So you could carry out a post-mortem harvest of the oocytes in their ovaries, and then again apply a spectra of assisted reproductive technologies to them to, again, to produce embryos.
Amazing. And this could be applied, if it works, then to other species, I presume.
Absolutely. There are groups all over the world, particularly, as I mentioned, Thomas's group in Germany. There's also a group in San Diego Zoo, I think, in California, that are investigating preservation of endangered cat species. So there is great scope to save these endangered species by oocyte biologists, by reproductive technologists, for the application of assisted reproductive technologies.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It's fascinating research on all angles of it, actually really interesting. Thanks very much, Professor Trudy Fair.
Thank you, Sean.
Well, that's all for this episode of Agri-Food Matters, the 13th in the series. If you'd like to get in touch with us or to make suggestions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Please email me, Sean Duke, presenter of Agri-Food Matters, at seancduke@gmail.com. It would be great if you enjoyed the show to rate it or review it on the iTunes podcast platform or any of the other podcast platforms it's now on, which includes Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. Thanks for listening, And until we meet here next time, it's goodbye from all of us at Agri-Food Matters.